Hear these excerpts from 1 John chapters 3 and 4. What marvelous love the Father has extended to us. Just look at it. We're called children of God. That's who we really are. But that's also why the world doesn't recognize us or take us seriously, because it has no idea who he is or what he's up to.
But friends, that's exactly who we are, children of God. And that's only the beginning. Who knows how we'll end up? What we know is that when Christ is openly revealed, we'll see him. And in seeing him become like him, Jesus' life is a model for our own.
Here's how you tell the difference between God's children and the devil's children. The one who won't practice righteous ways isn't from God, nor is the one who won't love brother or sister.
This is the original message we heard. We should love each other.
This is how we've come to understand and experience love. Christ sacrificed his life for us. This is why we ought to live sacrificially for our fellow believers and not just be out for ourselves.
If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but you turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears, and you made it disappear.
My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. This is the only way we'll know we're living truly, living in God's reality.
It's also the way to shut down debilitating self-criticism, even when there is something to it. For God is greater than our worried hearts and knows more about us than we do ourselves.
And friends, once that's taken care of and we're no longer accusing or condemning ourselves, we're bold and free before God. We're able to stretch our hands out and receive what we ask for, because we're doing what he said, doing what pleases God. Again, this is God's command, to believe in his personally named Son, Jesus Christ. He told us to love each other in line with the original command. As we keep his commandments, we live deeply and surely in him, and he lives in us. And this is how we experience his deep and abiding presence in us, by the Spirit he gave us.
God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God, and God lives in us.
This way, love has the run of the house, becomes at home and mature in us, so that we're free of worry on Judgment Day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ's.
There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear. Since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, is one not yet fully formed in love.
We, though, are going to love. Love and be loved.
First, we were loved. Now we love.
God loved us first.
Years ago this month, I was exchanging emails with a woman I had never met in person. Those were the days before Facebook, so I could only imagine what she looked like. Our email correspondence was working out the details for a possible interview. I knew she lived in Huntington, Pennsylvania, and she was chair of the search team for the Stone Church of the Brethren. Her name, Harriet Kaler. And she let me know that there would be 12 persons planning on gathering around the dinner table at Ellis Hall for the March interview. It was an intense time for Dale and I as we waited, sometimes rather impatiently, at times with fear, to sense God's call in our life. We had felt we were the second choice in one setting, and we had received that reject call with some disappointment 2 months previously. We would be flying across the country from our home in Nebraska, trying to juggle two different church interviews in one trip. So the details needed to be very clear. The March 16th date finally arrived. The previous evening, we had experienced a clear sign that the church interviewing us was not where God would be calling us. It didn't seem that they had read our pastoral profile very carefully, for they obviously did not comprehend what team ministry might mean. Their first question to us had indicated that Dale would be the senior pastor, doing all the preaching, and they wondered just how I might lead the Christian education program. I don't remember the exact approach, but it didn't feel quite like God's love to me. Perhaps those previous experiences set us up to be a little more anxious then for this time with the Stone Church Search Committee. On the way to, in our rental car, we ran into a major traffic jam, and we had not realized the time that it would take us to drive through Harrisburg. So as we came through those narrows of Lewistown, it was obvious that we are probably not going to arrive on time. And there was more anxiety and stress, and we finally attempted to find a phone booth. Yes, a phone booth. Those of you who remember those. To let those who are waiting for us at Stone Church that we would arrive late. That's never a good start. I remember finding a parking place along the side street and wondering just where we should enter. And we came through those fellowship glass doors, and it felt like a church that had a maze hard to negotiate. Needless to say, however, we found the office. We met Donna Rhodes and Judy Cooper. And then we were ushered into a vehicle to a quick trip to Camp Blue Diamond before being ready to sit at that table of the 12. The rest, you might say, is history. Yet I know what I experienced at that table that evening was a call. It was about God and love. And as we talked into the night, there was a great sense of peace. And there was love. In Eugene Peterson's introduction to 1 John of the Message, he writes this: "The two most difficult things to get straight in life are love and God. More often than not, the mess that people make of their lives can be traced to failure or stupidity or meanness in one or both of these areas. The basic and biblical Christian conviction is that these two subjects are intricately related. And if we want to deal with God the right way, we have to learn to love the right way. If we want to love the right way, we have to deal with God in the right way. God and love can't be separated. It's not always easy. But John's letter points to Jesus as this full and true understanding of God. And Jesus shows the mature working out of love. But Peterson remarks that there are always people around who don't want to be pinned down to the God that Jesus reveals, to the love that Jesus reveals. They want to make up their own idea of God, make up their own style of love. The author of 1 John was the pastor to a church or churches disrupted by some of those people. And as he wrote, he was seeking to help these people understand the original and the organic unity of God and love that comes to focus through Jesus. I return often to this 1 John, for I know that I can read in this short book some basics. For example, in chapter 3, "So my dear children, don't let anyone divert you from the truth. It's the person who acts right who is right, just as we see it lived out in Jesus' life. And then there's this. My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. God is greater than our worried hearts and knows more about us than we do ourselves. And from chapter 4, when we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. This way, love has the run of the house, becomes at home and mature in us. It's a basic 101 course. But the words penetrate the challenge and the very difficulty of Christian love itself. Rainer Rilke is considered one of the most significant poets in the German language. During his lifetime in the early 1900s, he wrote these immortal words. Love, he said, is the most, perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks. The work for which all other work is but preparation. Love is perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks. The work for which all other work is but preparation. On this Sunday, all of us live into the reality of this announcement that I have now sensed a new chapter in my life. And I will be ending my pastoral work with you. But there is love. And that's what makes the decision more difficult. For there is love. I was struck by the words of Krista Tippett, interviewer and author of her most recent book called Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. She notes that if we are stretching to live wiser and not just smarter, we will aspire to learn what love means, how it arises and deepens, how it withers and revives, and what it looks like as a private good, but also as a common good. Because it is the best of which we are capable, loving is also supremely exacting. Not always, but again and again. Love is something we only master in moments, she said. It crosses the chasms between us and likewise brings them into relief. In the book, she tells some of her own life story of falling in love and then, after several years, realizing she had only fallen in love with the idea. Two very different people, she said. We were held together by nothing greater than ourselves when we could no longer be there for one another. And when her marriage ended, she realized that she, along with thousands of others, continued to idealize this romantic love and actually crave it. She would say, I had this hole in my life where love should be. Yet she began to recognize that she had amazing love in her life. Many forms of loving. She took great delight in her children and cooked dinner for gatherings of friends, old and new, and invested in beautiful friendships and grew great sustenance from the webs of care through her work. She said, I realized that I was perceiving a scarcity in the midst of abundance. I have love in my life, many forms of loving, she said. As I settled into singleness, I grew saner, kinder, more generous, more loving in untheatrical ways, everyday ways. And I can't name the day when I suddenly realized that the lack of love in my life was not a reality, but it was a poverty of imagination and a carelessly narrow use of an essential word. A poverty of imagination. That often manifests itself into fear. And we wonder here, what will come next? Our thoughts pour out and we can become paralyzed. It's happening every day as we live into the daily news reports. And fear can always keep us from love. Guadalupe Garcia de Reyes went to Mass and said a prayer before her immigration check-in this last Wednesday in Phoenix. It was her eighth visit since her 2008 arrest and conviction for using that fake Social Security number. And after each meeting, the married mother of two was released, and she went back to her family. But this time was different. Most of us are aware that the undocumented immigrant was detained Wednesday and deported within 24 hours to her native Mexico. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials claim that there was nothing special about her case. She committed a crime, was placed under the deportation order, and her time had come. Whatever the reason, Garcia, age 35, said she has no regrets. Not about coming to the U.S. as a teenager in search for a better life nearly two decades ago, or staying illegally and working under a fake Social Security number. Not about going to the immigration check-in despite the risk of deportation. She says, "The truth is, I was here in the U.S. for my children, for a better future, to work for them. And I don't regret it because I did it for love. I'm going to keep fighting so that they continue to study in their country and so that their dreams become a reality." Her detention has now prompted days of demonstrations of standing up. And there is love. This week, the Church of the Brethren issued a statement about the response to a query at annual conference entitled, "The Authority of Annual Conference and Districts Regarding the Accountability of Ministers, Congregations, and Districts." It's really concerning denominational clergy who perform same-sex marriages. As I read that report, it felt as though the words were given as law rather than love. Certainly I and we will be searching about our own response and wondering how we stand up for love in the midst of all that fear. And there is love. Whether you and I are together in our life here at Stone Church or we are miles apart, love is perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks, the work for which all our other work is but preparation. The seal of God's love has come upon my heart. Some of you I have known for these 18 years, while others of you have come perhaps today or in recent weeks. And yet that love of God, that seal, binds us. At the core of our being together, at the center of our lives, is the love that will bind us together and call us to new chapters. God's love always pushes. It prompts us to grow. It encourages us to move forward. And because of that, we leave with new hope, with a greater sense of purpose for the days ahead. Yes, for there is love. Amen.